I'm not that big into magic yet. So
yet,
I don't believe in magic, honestly.
Fucking
oh, the ghost is back.
Oh no. All right. What
is that? Byron, what are you doing?
I think we got a ghoul. There's a ghoul in the house.
That actually scared you too, I can tell.
Right, Dave. This is episode 47. I'm your host, Byron. And tonight, summer camp horror twists, bends, falls in love, pukes black stuff everywhere, and we're going to talk about it, reviewing David Yarvetsky's The Hive. Is that right, Sam?
Good pronunciation.
Thank you,
Sounds
Kelly.
Sounds right to me.
But before we open that barricaded door, we'll be playing a chat I had with Matthew A. Brown, the director of the film Julia. And we head south to the city of Phoenix, Arizona, the location of the most documented potentially extraterrestrial encounter in the history of the United States. In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, I'm joined tonight by Kelly,
Captain,
and hey. Sam.
Hey guys.
Got it. Nailed it. And we're back. How are you guys doing?
Great.
I'm okay.
Cool.
I was actually surprised. So I'm used to every year when Christmas is over, I get real melancholy.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, like real melancholy.
You mean Halloween?
Yeah, that's what I meant. It's the only holiday that exists.
But that's what happened. This year I had this really weird experience. For the first time ever, I got sad when Halloween was over.
I didn't leave my bed for a couple days, honestly. I don't know what it was.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You gotta let people know when you're feeling like that,
Listen,
Byron.
Man, we're working through it. It's just, I didn't really celebrate like I should have this year. We were busy.
You went to Scarywood?
I did. I saw a bunch of ghouls, a gaggle of ghouls.
Okay, so I'm just gonna say the fact that they had people dressed up like the house is October built, that was deep.
Yeah, either
they dug.
Either this haunted house in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho was pulling deep, or that's a standard mask.
Random occurrence.
I mean, it could just be houses of October built. It was like, that's a spooky mask at Party Central, and they rolled with it.
It could be. I don't know. I'd like to give them some credit. I thought that was pretty kick-ass.
It was good. That was part of their dollhouse attraction. I celebrated enough Halloween, and plus it's Halloween all year, right?
It's so always Halloween.
We're still going strong with Halloween.
Just because you don't have a jack-o'-lantern on the doorstep doesn't mean you can't have one in your heart.
That's the kindest thing you've ever said out loud. That's nice.
Okay, I'm having like the most creepy deja vu right now.
Okay.
Oh, like what you just said and a text message I just received, like all of that to get really creepy, like maybe
sure.
The strongest
well, sure,
deja vu.
You're always texting while we're podcasting.
No, that's I mean like the combination, like I've heard, I feel really weird right now. Like super.
Should we stop the podcast? Should
super
we stop recording?
Extreme deja vu. All like right. We just had some weird convergence of parallel universes. I can feel it.
You are a wild-eyed street corner preacher right now.
Like, seriously, I'm not kidding. That's like the strongest deja vu I've ever felt. Tell me, you guys have never felt deja vu?
Never felt deja vu.
Someday I'll have to do an episode on deja vu.
I'd love to hear that. Do you think that there's what is it?
That is not me.
All right, show's still going.
Wait, no, seriously, I am not. What the fuck was that?
I don't know.
You guys, Sam, were you doing something?
What can I do to possibly
okay,
make
who the
that?
Fuck just heard that? What just happened?
No, no, hold tight.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
You have it? No, okay. So it's possible that we did just pass through another timeline.
Oh my god!
Which is fine.
I'm seriously dying. Right
That's
now.
All right.
Oh my god!
So.
Stop.
Kelly, in your previous memory, what happened with that sound? What did that sound
so do you think
that sound wasn't there. That sound was a part of the deja vu.
See, the problem is, calm down. If the listeners can't hear it, you need to sit down. What if the listeners didn't hear anything?
Then you've just obligated Byron to create some sound
All right.
from scratch.
Sit down.
Have you ever seen Coherence?
I have not seen Coherence yet. Do you think that there's a possibility that in another timeline...
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Gunnar Hansen is still alive?
I think it's almost
oh my
a certainty.
God. What's going on? What's
All right,
going Matt. On?
Well, now it can be.
What's going on?
Are you crying?
Oh my god.
Oh no.
Oh, what time is it?
I'm so scared.
It's 9:12.
What's going on? This is the scariest thing that's ever happened to me. What's going on? I feel like something horrible just happened.
Are you serious?
Why are we not on Periscope right now?
Now everything's fine. We didn't cross through a timeline.
Did you hear that noise? It was right after I had that horrible teaser.
You know what? Never hurt anybody.
I'm so scared.
Noises.
I'm so scared.
All right. I can't believe this is happening. It's all right.
It's okay, Kel.
Spit just fell from her mouth. All right. Okay, I've turned it off. It's not funny anymore. Hug your wife.
I can't. She's too far away.
Okay, seriously?
And we're separated by a terrifying sound.
True. Byron, I need you to explain to me what that could possibly have been.
I'm not sure.
Oh my god, I'm so scared.
So
there's no need to be scared.
I'm like in the wrong dimension now.
I've
been spit out in the wrong dimension and shit's going to be weird tomorrow.
Cables that are literally held into the mixer with electricity.
That doesn't explain a whooshing noise. It sounds like a passing train or something. I'm so scared.
Why are you worried? If it's a train, why are you worried?
So, all right. So,
I can't.
You have to move on.
I don't think you understand. Sam, did you watch Coherence with me? I can't remember.
I don't know. Not
no, like not seriously, something is like
no. Everything's fine. Everything is perfectly fine. Gunnar Hansen died yesterday,
which is
terrible.
Such a bummer.
I got home about 2 a.m. and I saw the news on Twitter. It's crazy how fast that stuff breaks and spreads. It was not the best way to go to sleep because Gunnar Hansen plays the original Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, my favorite movie of all time. He's probably the scariest thing ever when he throws open that trap door.
Yeah. The chainsaw dance.
Chainsaw dance forever.
Is, I don't care what genre, is one of the best scenes in cinematic history.
Well, that's why they played the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in so many college courses on film. You know, it's a near perfect film, and I'm devastated. It's terribly sad. He is 68 years old, pretty young still. What can you do? You can be a total dick about it on the internet.
Yeah, if you were, I don't know, a fake Leatherface.
What's this guy's name? Andrew?
Andrew Brenner, fucking Brenner, Briniarski.
No, it doesn't matter. Who played the remake version of Leatherface?
Yeah.
What did he have to say about the death of Gunnar Hansen?
I believe his direct quote was, "Boo hoo."
Mm-hmm. That's what you do.
Yeah.
That.
Especially for a washed up prick that's hoping to someday find work again in the horror genre.
Oh, he just dug himself so deep.
Yeah.
Kelly, are you okay?
I don't think you guys have any concept of how deeply disturbed I am right now.
Andrew, whatever his fucking name was, doesn't deserve any more press, though.
Sure.
I thought it was really cool. I mean, social media is generally just a gigantic circle jerk. But it's kind of cool to see people, you know, across Twitter feeds, Instagram, Facebook, you know, people who we really look up to come out and just talk about how important Gunnar Hansen was to them, even though, you know, maybe he didn't have the blockbuster career that some other actors did.
Leatherface, man.
Yeah, he's Leatherface. And it's just cool that people acknowledge that.
Last year, I ordered Chainsaw Confidential. And I never cracked it, but now I'm going to start ripping through it. God. You're going to be okay?
Yeah.
Jeez, this is...
Okay.
Are you back?
I honestly, super freaked out.
Sure.
What do you guys think that wind noise was?
We can't spend much more time on this.
Like, none.
How are you guys not freaked out?
Just because a ghost opened up the show and then we passed through an alternate timeline. The reason I'm not spooked or freaked out is because it was just an audio noise in my headphone and you guys are all still here. It's not like that VHS viral segment by Nacho Vingalongo where you have weird flashlight eyes and there's not a Nazi blimp outside, you know?
Okay, no, it's not that, but
that
like...
That was a good segment.
It was great. It was
really
a lot of fun.
Liked that.
It was the only redeeming...
Nacho's rad.
I like Nacho.
He's a good dude.
What do you think it was, Kelly?
Something horrible and terrifying. I like can't even... I mean... The deja vu I had was super creepy.
I have about 45 seconds of video that, with your permission, I'd like to share with our fans.
I'm going to have to see that before you share it.
Sure.
I'm not a pretty crier.
Oh. I can't say anything about that. That was an interesting moment. I really do hope that the audio that you heard that spooked you actually existed.
Okay, don't say that I heard. We all heard
it. We all heard it. I know. I understand.
Don't make
that.
This a crazy Kelly situation.
Well,
most situations can.
I mean, my reaction was a little bit more visceral than yours.
Sure.
But that's only because I am more closely in tune with.
It doesn't matter. It's all right. Yeah. Maybe this is what bummed me out about Halloween. Exorcism Live, a special. Yeah.
I'm interested in your take on that, Byron.
I used to think that I missed live television, but this is a really good reason to just stick with the scripted stuff and cut out the bullshit, because that's all this was. They're exorcising a house, not a person.
Yeah.
So yes. That's number one for people listening. They're not exorcising a person, which would be more interesting to me, but... The house they're exorcising is the house that inspired the story of The Exorcist. Kelly, you know anything about this?
I know a little bit about it. I mean, to say that it inspired The Exorcist is, it's a pretty dramatic re-envisioning of what actually reportedly happened.
Well, there's at least one thing we can agree on, and that's that it's not haunted, because that's not a thing.
Well, no, it could be.
It was a young boy named Roland Doe.
Yeah, I think the Doe part was just a...
Like John Doe.
Yep.
But it is really funny because it sounds like he worked at a pizza place or something.
Roland Doe.
Yeah, Roland Doe.
That's a kick-ass name.
I don't think it's a good name
that.
One bit. It's terrible.
Roland Doe.
Kelly, you've talked briefly in the past about Ghost Asylum.
Yes.
The Tennessee Wraith Chasers, as they call themselves.
Yes.
Well, we have finally caught up with those guys. They're the people in charge of walking through the house before, what's his name?
Those guys are... Oh.
Chip Caffrey? Is that his name?
Yeah.
So they like to start out with something that I thought was pretty interesting called the fist bump to the big guy, which is where they do a big prayer circle that obviously is shot by three different camera angles, because that's the most important part of praying.
Yeah, there's a...
Making sure it's visible to the audience.
I mean,
right?
I'm just going to say, though, honestly, if you're a religious person, is this something that would be condoned? I know the Catholics are pretty strict about it.
Let's not minimize what it is. Yeah, don't fist bump the big guy.
Yeah, I mean, it seems just a bit demeaning.
I'm not really into it.
Yeah.
I'm not really into them one bit. They go in, everyone freaks out. I played a couple clips for you where
they're such tools.
And this is something that I think that they really benefit with editing, is like they hear a noise and they go, what was that? But it was obviously like a guy eating out of a potato chip bag. And he's like... It wasn't me. I didn't do nothing. Oh. And there's just, it's everything.
No, man. Yeah. It wasn't me.
It's insanity. And I kind of like these shows. You like Zachary Bagans?
I love Bagans.
But live, this is just the most boring and monotonous torture. I hated it.
Yeah, I mean, the clips that we watched, it was kind of sad in a way. These quote-unquote ghost hunters or whatever are so poorly prepared for life. Just meat.
They're mediocre improv people, improvisationalers,
and they have the and then they have the actual host who's doing the announcements, like, tonight we delve deep into the realm of blah 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 in this house, and then you can like see a PA like trying to wave one of the fat ghost hunters
get out of the shot now. I don't know, it was silly. They sit in something called the Devil's Toy Box, which is just a big glass box with mirrors in the corner that they're saying will focus the energy of the evil demons so the person in the middle can communicate with them. What fucking science is that?
It's the science of
actually,
exorcism,
there's a lot of
Byron.
Interesting stuff that has to do with mirrors.
And why call it the Devil's Toy Box?
Yeah, actually, I feel like Bagans has used that before.
Has he, it must be a thing in ghost hunting.
It is. It is. It's a thing.
I think that's been on Coast to Coast, too.
I just don't get it.
Regularly.
I was pretty disappointed. People were tweeting at home. I caught this one, wrote it down. One person at home asked, can the spirits come through the screen? And the host goes, excellent question. And then moved on to the next one. Like, didn't answer it, but still gave her the acknowledgement that that's a legitimate thing that they should be thinking.
Well, you can't figure out a way to say no. You're a fucking...
Oh. You just don't read it. Last thing I have here, after they actually did the exorcism in the house, the host asked the priest if he thought the exorcism worked, and the priest said, I think through the power of God, anything will work.
Well, that's a bullshit answer.
What does that mean? What does that mean? That anything will
work
or did
work? Are there demons in the house presently, or are there no demons in the house?
It made no sense. The whole thing was a bust. We need more things like WNUF Halloween special.
Oh my That's God, all. I love
WNUF. I just
WNUF.
Wish I would have watched that. Speaking of WNUF Halloween special, my copy of WNUF TV 28 presents Frank Stewart Investigates Halloween showed up on vinyl. Did I say that? Did I say the word vinyl? I got a vinyl record.
You did.
This is available for the first time since 1987, apparently. It's all these tracks of Frank investigating all these different Halloween things before the incident that happened in the Halloween special. And on the back, it's the two ghost hunters, the couple that's kind of like the Warrens talking and doing seances. It's incredible. And I mean, the cool thing is all the profits go towards finding Frank and the rest of the crew that went missing that night. So pretty
Holy
amazing.
Shit, that is so fantastic.
That is cool.
I only listened to a little bit of it because it was a busy holiday, but I'm excited to drag that out through permanent Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, WNUF is one of, I think, all of our absolute favorites.
Absolutely. It's a treat and it's something everyone should watch every Halloween. What have you guys been watching?
So much Walking Dead.
You're almost caught up to the...
Well, we're completely caught up in the sense that we're through last season. Now we just need to start watching this season.
I think that's great.
I loved last season.
Really? It took me a little bit to get used to the hospital.
It was Sam's favorite season so far.
I'm glad that you dug it, man.
I don't know what we talk about without giving things away because so much heavy shit happens.
Yeah. Real heavy.
It's a grim season.
So grim.
There's just something about those obvious filler episodes that is always disappointing to me.
Which one would you say is an obvious filler episode?
Well, where they separated from like all the main cast four episodes in the middle where it's just Beth and a couple other people.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I dug it.
I mean, I do love Beth, but can't say anything.
Can't say anything more.
You'll like a couple of episodes this season. There's a Morgan-heavy episode.
I'm really excited to learn as much as I can about that Morgan.
You'll like that Morgan
fella? I like him.
He's pretty all right.
I like him a lot.
So is that all you guys watch? No horror beyond that?
I feel like if I were in the apocalypse...
15 hours of horror.
That's a lot. I know. I'm just no pressure.
Morgan and Michonne would be my crew. That's who I'd take with me.
They're pretty great. Handy.
I feel like you could survive anything with those two.
True survivors. So I'm taking it that you didn't watch Ash versus Evil Dead yet?
We don't have TV.
I know you
don't.
Well,
we do have TV. We don't have cable. Soon.
Is Ash?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's everything you could ever hope for. I'm not going to talk much about it because we've
Byron's
talked a lot.
Excited.
I didn't think I would be because you know my relationship with the Army of Darkness series versus the remake of Evil Dead, which I hold in very high regard. I think this is a perfect combination of both. I'm extremely happy, and if it continues on this pace, I think this is going to be one of my favorite TV shows. I love it. Yeah, Sam Raimi directed the first episode, killed it. I want him to do more TV.
Yay!
Yay!
Who directed the other ones?
I don't know. Don't ask me things like that. God damn it, Sam.
Oh, sorry.
God damn it.
All right.
I'm out of here.
This.
I don't blame you.
I'm a different me, right?
You are, honestly.
I'm a different me.
Byron.
What do you mean?
You're not Byron from my dimension.
I wish I had a weird...
I'm so freaked out right now.
I wish
now.
I had a weird mustache. That'd be fun.
Like, this is how I imagine
Our
people
Byron
who
doesn't
do
have
acid
a Hitler mustache.
Feel.
You're still feeling the effects of the switchover.
I'm just real freaked out. I'm not going to sleep all tonight.
Your pupils are very dilated.
Are they?
Yeah.
I'm really scared.
I think this is a gem. It's very authentic what just happened in the middle.
I am the most scared I think I've ever been.
Serious?
Yeah.
I think you need to sleep more is my guess.
Maybe. Could be.
I'm going to let you have a quick nap while we run a conversation I had with a really nice guy named Matthew A. Brown. And we talk about his movie Julia, which is available now on VOD.
I can't sleep through that. I loved that movie. I got to hear what he has to say.
No, take a nap.
So, Matthew,
can you tell us a little bit about your film, Julia?
It's a very radical, violent, stylish revenge thriller that sees a woman go on a rather dark and twisted journey after being brutally sexually assaulted. But through this journey and a highly unorthodox form of therapy that she falls prey to, she actually awakens to her own most holy and ecstatic, albeit evil, being. Would you say that captures it?
Yeah, I very much so. So you premiered this film at Pucheon International Fantastic Film Festival in South Korea, which I found interesting because it definitely has that Korean revenge tone to it. Was this genre an influence on Julia?
Yeah, I mean, I at the time that I was approached, because actually I was approached by an executive producer to develop a short film I'd made into the feature. And at that time, I was really fascinated and actually just discovering Japanese and Korean revenge thriller horror type cinema. And I was also getting very into Hong Kong gangster noirs, like most notably really Johnny To. So it had a lot to do with, I think, the direction the story went in some ways. But also, I mean, my influence was definitely also very much on the American side of things, like David Fincher, Michael Mann, and so on.
I can definitely see that David Fincher darkness in this. Are there any specific film examples that influenced Julia?
You know, there were different films that my cinematographer and I really looked specifically at. One of the first films that he actually had mentioned was Let the Right One In, the Swedish version, although I don't think it really found its way very much into what Julia became. But, you know, we'd looked at Vengeance by Johnny To. That was kind of sort of at the forefront. And then we'd also actually looked at, Jean-Pierre Melville's The Samurai. And also True Romance actually was a reference.
That's bizarre. You're like the third director that I've talked to in which True Romance was mentioned.
Really?
So weird.
Yeah.
How was the film received in South Korea?
I didn't go to the one in Korea. It was just too heavy of a journey, and I don't know. There were other festivals that I were on the horizon that we'd already been selected for that I knew I would go to. So actually the first festival I went to was our European premiere at Fright Fest in London, which was absolutely incredible. The audience there was amazing. And just the audience generally at the festival was incredible. And that was kind of our first bout of, you know, it being exposed to the world. And, it was a really great Q&A after, and just really like high electric kind of feeling. And that night, like all the reviews started coming out, and, you know, it was filled with all this, the kind of madness and beauty, which is Julia. Like, there was one reviewer, British reviewer named Anton Bittel. I'll just never forget the way he, just the way he spoke about the film. It was like the energy of the film itself was pulsing in his blood in the review. And it was so cool. It was the very first one I'd read. But it was good. It was, and then of course there's people who really don't like the film. It seems that people either love it or hate it. And I guess that's totally to be expected for this kind of film.
Was this the screening where someone passed out during a castration scene, or was that?
No, that was actually at Screenfest in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Screenfest Horror Film Festival. And that was our US, kind of our US premiere.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
That seems kind of like a benchmark in horror if you can make someone pass out during your screening, especially at a horror festival where you would think people would be prepared to see some pretty horrific stuff.
Yeah, no, it was funny because the head of the festival was there, and, you know, they were helping the guy. It was actually a 6'5" Australian guy, and I believe he broke his nose when he passed out. And you know, the festival people were like, they mentioned like tweeting it and stuff, and he was like, no, go ahead, you know, tweet it. But I don't know, it just wasn't where my head was at, like in terms of taking advantage of that. But it's definitely a cool thing that I think, you know, in retrospect should be spoken about.
Absolutely. So recently there seems to have been a bit of a resurgence in rape revenge films. I don't know if you necessarily consider Julia to be one, but from Jason Banker's Felt to sequels of the I Spit on Your Grave franchise. Why do you think directors are tackling this topic now?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is that I never saw Julia as a rape revenge film. And honestly, like, I don't watch those kinds of films. And my influences were all very much outside of that genre. I actually only became aware of this sort of subgenre of horror after the fact, when in fact at Fright Fest I started reading reviews and people would reference that film among others. You know, people were often saying this is nothing like those films, but they would be referenced. And in some cases people say, oh, it's like a cross between A Spit in Your Grave and something else. So then I finally went back and I watched some of those films, and I was just like, you know, this is just not Julia. This is not what it is. The emphasis is not on the sexual abuse aspect. It's actually much more on the journey of this main character who, through the darkness, awakens to this really like holy, ecstatic, albeit evil light. But I think there's definitely there's been a lot of talk though in the media. I mean, all this rape is coming out, like, I mean, the whole thing with Bill Cosby, I feel like every other week there's like another thing that's coming out. And I don't know if that's triggering, if it's up in people's subconscious or something, so it's resulting in certain stories that are being told. I'm not really sure what that's about.
There's no question that the subject matter of Julia is very dark. Did you have any trouble leaving that on set at the end of the day?
The thing is, you know, when you're, the darkness was always coupled with this intense kind of ecstasy, which was about the character and about the journey of the character. So, and you know, the whole overarching kind of feeling on the set and the kind of vision for the movie we were creating together, it was filled, even though it's obviously extremely dark and also twisted, it's filled with so much light. And it was filled with so much light for all of us who were involved, especially like the core kind of crew. So, you know, at the end of the day, we'd be going back to where we were staying in the car, and often they were night shoots. So, we would have just been completely like kind of shattered, but the sun would be coming up over the city skyline, and it was just this icy New York winter, and there was just this silence in the car, and we were just kind of in the zone. Some were sleeping, but I remember Ashley and I often just kind of being right there, just so high, feeling so high from everything.
Most horror fans would know Ashley as the center segment of The Human Centipede. How did you find her?
She, quite a few people had brought her up to me. And, in fact, our LA producers, Mark and Christine Holder from Zero Gravity, they had for quite some time been saying that I should see Ashley. And initially, I was a little bit hesitant because I wasn't comfortable with the association to The Human Centipede. Not because I don't, you know, it's not my cup of tea, that sort of film, but it was just, I knew that I was going, Julia's a different kind of a film, and I just wasn't comfortable with the association. And yeah, you just have to go with your gut, really. And then what happened was, so I actually initially said I didn't want to meet her initially, and somebody else was actually attached to the lead role for quite some time. And the benefit of having that other person attached was that it triggered like all the final financing coming in and a lot of pieces, and we got the green light. But then for whatever reason, you know, this person's attached for like 3 months, she dropped out like 2 weeks before the shoot. So in the final week of pre-production, we still didn't have Julia. And then people kept telling me I got to see Ashley. And I said, okay. And she walked in. And right when she walked into the office, we were at the production office. And people, you know, other actors were getting fitted. I mean, all the machinery was in effect. But I always knew that Julia was coming to me. I just had this very deep conviction. And she walked in, and I kind of felt a lot of who Julia is, like, a certain kind of a winded aspect. I just kind of sensed all the stuff inside of Ashley immediately. And then we worked for about 3 hours, and my cinematographer, everybody was in town because we were literally days away from shooting. And she was just absolutely brilliant, and we could really work together. So all the things I like to do as a director, Ashley could just go on that journey with me, and we just really raised each other's game. And then it was just about the look. And as soon as I saw her with the red wig on, and we did like a full on screen test, it was just, there she was. So we sent her to a salon the very next day to get her hair dyed red. And literally, I think 2 days later or 3 days later, we were shooting our first scene.
That's so great. I love it when things fall into place like that. You mentioned earlier that The Human Centipede isn't necessarily your cup of tea. What is it about horror that draws you to it?
I mean, Audition by Takashi Miike was actually very formative for me in a way. And it was kind of my first exposure to this other side of horror, because I don't watch the sort of more in-your-face kind of commercial American horror. The kind of horror that I'm interested in is much more what I've seen from coming from like the Japanese and Korean sort of revenge thriller horror type films. And there's a whole bunch of those. I mean, I saw The Devil comes to mind. There's the whole Old Boy trilogy. I just love this more, almost more realistic, of course, very stylized, but more realistic form of horror where, especially like I saw The Devil, you know, it's these great emotional stories that because of how extreme they get or how graphic they get, also fall into the horror category. But you take away the horror and there's still like a quality story in there. So that's sort of cinema. And then, you know, if I'm looking at American cinema, the one horror movie that I remember that really had an effect on me was a film called Orphan. I don't know if you've seen it with, I think it's Vera Farmiga. And I think it's directed by Jean Colette Seurat. But most of my influences are actually well outside of the horror genre. But now, because of Julia, of course, you know, there's a couple of horror things that are on my plate. But there's also like, you know, I'm more on the vein of crime, thriller, that sort of thing.
Are you currently working on anything you can talk about?
I mean, there's things that are in like active development. Like one of them is a World War II war horror that I'm involved with. And it's actually, I'm co-writing it with someone else. And, you know, there's already like producers involved and all that. And I have quite a few things that are set up with different people now. But it's kind of too early to really talk about. I mean, until you're kind of like actually on set, it's just somehow not real, you know? So I'm very excited about what's coming, and I've got really probably five or six things that are in very active development now, and I'm crazily excited about all of them, otherwise I wouldn't be involved with them. So Julia's definitely opened doors already for me, but I'm also open to the possibility of jumping into something to direct, like on a much, much bigger scale. So, we'll see.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you do next. But for now, when can our listeners be introduced to Julia?
So it's coming out in select theaters this coming Friday, October 23rd. And then depending on how that first week does, we'll expand to additional cinemas, like in an additional location. But then in terms of it really being available broadly, it comes out on like VOD, Blu-ray, DVD, and all that stuff on February 2nd. So I'm super excited about the theatrical release, of course, especially given that it's my first feature, it's more indie and all those things. But I just, you know, I'm at a point where I really, really just want the film to be available to everyone. So I'm actually really looking forward to the release online early next year.
Awesome. Is there a place where our listeners can follow you or the movie on social media?
There's a Julia website. It's juliathemovie.com. There's a Julia Facebook page. It's like just Julia-the-movie. There's a Julia Twitter page, which is at juliathemovie. And, you know, Ashley's on Twitter. I think it's at AshleyCW. And then she's also got her fan page on Facebook. So there's all these arenas. There's actually a website being created for me as well at the moment. So I think if people just go online and look up, you know, Julia the movie, Ashley C. Williams or whatever, I mean, all these things are going to pop up pretty readily.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Matthew.
Thank you so much.
Let's do it again soon.
Okay, man.
Such a great guy and a really cool movie. I had a lot of fun talking to Matthew. Thanks so much.
Yay.
You know who we're talking to next week?
Who?
I just got off the phone with Eli Morgan Gesner and Lydia Hurst about the movie Condemned.
Oh my gosh, cool.
That was a squishy flick.
Very wet.
Ugh, yeah.
We're going to hear that interview next week. But right now, there's something I want to talk about. And Kelly, it's not dimensional.
Oh, it very well might be.
Let's talk about the Phoenix Lights in this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies.
700 witnesses. I guess I don't start. This is your job.
700 interviewed witnesses.
Don't do that.
No, it's true.
Okay.
It's true. I appreciate your enthusiasm on this one. And I don't want to give anything away, but I just have a lot of positive energy going into this story because Byron said, I believe it.
Now, I didn't say that.
But he did. He said, I've seen the videos.
That's out of context.
Yeah, you can pull that.
I believe
out of the
it. I've seen the videos.
All right. Tell the people what's going on. Oh, that's blood. Mm-mm. That's blood.
Yeah. So we have a very interesting story here. Many of you who even dabble in the ufology realm have heard of this, and quite a few of you who don't. This was one of the first UFO events beyond Roswell that I heard about. Happened in 1997.
So let's figure out what was going on in 1997. I bet the Orlando Magic was killing it.
Sure.
It's a good guess.
Chumbawamba was burning up the charts.
Sure. I bought that CD. One of my first. I'm just trying to set the tone.
Okay. This was an evening where, keep in mind, this is before extensive internet access in terms of the way we look at it right now.
Yeah, well, keyword Phoenix Lights.
Yeah. What happened that evening is something that some people call mass hysteria. Other people will explain in many, many different ways. We'll probably talk about that in part two.
Ooh, you're teasing the part
there's
two.
There's just too much.
We
there's
got a two-parter here.
Yeah. But part one, I'm going to try and go
700
through.
700 interviews. Yeah, we got.
Yeah. I wish we could actually do all of them. That'd be amazing.
Let's read all the interviews.
That would be amazing. But tonight, what I want to do is walk through the actual chain of events, because many people don't know that there were two separate events. One of them happened in Prescott, and then the second one took place, as the name would indicate, in Phoenix. The first event started right around 8:15. That was when people started calling in. So obviously what we're going off of are reported witnesses. Mm-hmm. As with anything, the number of people who actually see something is going to be far greater than the number of people who report it. Bearing in mind that there have been 700 witnesses interviewed to date regarding the Phoenix Lights.
Sure.
The government has interviewed no one.
Wait, so who is doing the interviewing?
UFO investigators.
Okay.
Some people who actually
the Exorcism
are,
Live team.
Oh,
stop
nice.
It.
The Tennessee Race
Stop
chasers.
It. Whatever. Some people who are actually skeptics and just trying to get to the bottom of it because they really want to explain it as something perfectly natural, which I think that's great, because if it is, that's wonderful. Let's hear about it. We're going to move through the events of that night and hopefully come to a point at the end of tonight's episode where we can get at least a good picture of what happened and prepare next week to hear some really in-depth eyewitness accounts and possible explanations for what happened.
Funny thing is, a lot of people got a good picture of what it was. This is one of the few video recorded encounters.
Well, because there were so many people who saw it, there was a good chunk who recorded it on video. Again, that just shows how widespread this event was. If you have, there were multiple videos, I want to say 7 or 8
yeah,
that have been handed in.
I guess not all.
Well, we will have some of them up on the site.
Friday.com. I'm just saying that maybe people want to take a look before you continue. So you could press pause.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go to Friday.com.
Go check it out.
Check out the news, reviews, trailers that we have up there, as well as the videos of the Phoenix Lights.
Take a glimpse at that. Okay, now that you've all looked
Welcome
at it
back,
and you're back, that's great. That's cool. Excellent.
Hi, everybody.
Perfect. All right, we're going to start with, like I said, 8:15. First object reported over the sky in Prescott, Arizona.
What was the day, real quick?
March 13th. The first call that came into the National UFO Hotline was actually a former police officer. He's remained anonymous. He called and said he and his family just witnessed a bizarre cluster of red lights moving quickly across the sky. And this was about 30 miles north of Prescott.
Okay.
I don't know if this matters at all, but for whatever reason. This is a Thursday night. Let's just put us completely in the... So
not TGIF.
No, not TGIF.
Not must-see TV.
No.
People got nothing to do. Seinfeld's not on.
Oh, God, I hate Seinfeld.
Oh, the Full House is going to be tomorrow. Maybe people are stoked about that.
This guy who called described witnessing 4 to 5 lights, followed by a single light that seemed to be standing back from the others. That's a quote from him from this actual report. The lights in the lead gave the impression that they were in a V formation, and they formed somewhat of a wedge or boomerang shape. Depending on the witness reports, and we'll get into those in great detail next time, some people think that it looked like it was one single ship. Others say it looked like multiple ships flying in formation.
At a distance.
Yep.
So when is Sam going to tell me what he thinks about like military technology? Is that next week?
Actually, I would like to get a little bit of that from Sam tonight. However, I want to talk a little bit more about the events. And then I do think it would be a great time to get some Sam's...
Because that's a lot of people said
weapons
that
weapons accuracy report.
Weapons authenticity,
authenticity report.
Sam's weapons authenticity report.
My bad.
It could be people testing flares, different types of, I guess, just flares mostly.
I'm trying to be a scientist, so I'm not going to say how ridiculous the flares explanation is, but moving right along.
Because I saw something on TV the other day where they shot a little parachute that had a flare on it.
The problem is there were two completely different events, and that might explain the one in Phoenix. It's not going to explain the one in Prescott because there were no... We're going to work on the explanations next episode, Byron. Okay. Today, we're just walking through the events of the night.
Shut up, Byron.
Okay, that's what I heard.
Yep. So the next calls came from closer to Prescott and then Prescott Valley. Just for a frame of reference, Prescott's about 50 miles north of Phoenix. Okay. Many people who call again report in this very same time frame, 4 or 5 very bright lights. Some of the observers say it was triangular. So we're hearing very consistent reports. Now, this is why it's important to keep in mind the technology of the day. Things aren't being posted on the internet as all of this is happening. Mm-mm. So the whole idea of mass reports that are very similar to one another has more credibility, in my opinion, coming from 1997, because they weren't all in cahoots and they weren't all reading each other's and getting ideas planted in their head. All of these people are calling independent.
It's not like Roswell where you go, "Hey, Billy, my neighbor, did you see that?" And they like tell a story, and then that person tells a story, and it continues
on. Well, that's not what happened with
Roswell.
That's
what happened with Billy and his neighbor.
Oh, my God, I have to do an episode on Roswell to change your brain.
Well, I'm just saying, like, what's the difference between Roswell and this?
Well, the nice thing is, at this point, there was a national UFO hotline set up so that people could actually call, and there would be a record of these events.
Okay.
And at least society had become enough open to the concept of UFOs that people felt like they could at least call in. Now, a lot of those people called in anonymously because, like, this police officer, the first call, clearly is worried about, you know, ramifications in his line of work.
Why did he say that he was a police officer then?
I think probably just to add validity to his story, because I think it does make somebody sound more credible.
Sure.
Yeah. Another observer standing outside with his wife in Prescott Valley sees this cluster of lights. So we're hearing changes. Some people are saying they all appear to be white. Some people say they all appear to be red. But other people are witnessing over a long period of time that the lights are actually changing colors back and forth. Okay, so that makes a little more sense. So this husband and wife standing outside their house in Prescott, they watch it for 2 to 3 minutes with binoculars passing directly overhead. And then they see the lights, and this is in their words, bank to the right, disappear into the night sky southeast of Prescott Valley. Okay, 2 to 3 minutes they watch them. So, I mean, when you think about that, that's a long... It is. They're cruising, but it's a long time to witness something and actually be able to trace it and follow it. So it's kind of cool. Next sighting is Dewey, Arizona, and it's about 10 miles south of Prescott. So we're moving south. 5 adults and youth were driving north on Highway 69 to an appointment in Prescott. No idea what this appointment was.
It's a late appointment.
8:30 at night. Yeah,
Come on now.
I know.
It's school the next
get
day.
Get home.
I know. But this is directly from the UFO hotline. By this time, the object was directly above them. The driver pulled off the road into a grocery store parking lot, and they get out of the car. They're looking up at him. Here is a quote from the person who took the report from these individuals. The member of the group who called the hotline reported that the object was so large that if he clenched his fist and held it at arm's length, he could not cover the size of the object with his fist. So if you're thinking about that and looking up at the night sky,
I'd say probably just scoot the fist closer to your face so you can cover it up.
Yeah, it's totally relative. It depends on how far away it was. I mean...
Right, but my point is if he's holding it out like this, and it's not covering it up, it either has to be A, really low, or B, really big.
Or C, his arm is both. Really long.
Okay, let's just... Now, here's a really interesting part. This person who called up had flying experience. He estimated the object was not over 1,000 feet above the ground. He emphasized there was absolutely no sound emanating from the object. Completely silent, moving at a very slow pace, considerably slower, for example, than a light aircraft would have been seen to move at that altitude. Okay? Mm-hmm. Keeping in mind that this guy has aircraft experience, and he's saying that. He adds that he can see a small private aircraft in the vicinity of the object overhead, and that that aircraft seemed to be heading in the direction of the Prescott Airport. More about that aircraft I will describe later when there is a very interesting and controversial story regarding some scrambling of F-15s. Sam?
Yes?
It's a jet.
Sam?
Yes, it's a plane. It's a fighter jet.
Yeah, sure. There are conflicting reports, and even the UFO network has said we've done a lot of digging and we cannot confirm that this is true, but we have heard a couple people that have talked about that. Anyhow, we'll get to that later.
While we're talking about planes, Sam, wasn't it around this time that they were starting to really master stealth technology, maybe doing tests like that?
I think that that's one of those things that's going to be ongoing until we have perfect cloaking devices.
But planes, they're excellent flying slower and being stealth, right?
Yeah, invisible to radar.
The same person who reported this and who has some type of aircraft experience also informs the UFO hotline that he has reported this sighting to both the Prescott Airport and Luke Air Force Base. The female operator at Luke Air Force Base told him that their switchboard had been lighting up all night with reports about this strange object. However, later, when media called Luke Air Force Base, Luke Air Force Base's line was, we received no calls about the object.
Hmm.
So here's the thing. If it really was nothing, why the hell would that happen?
Because it was a secret aircraft being tested by the government?
That's a decent answer. That's a decent answer. Moving on.
Okay.
Moving on.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yep.
I just didn't.
People started calling from Chino Valley, Tempe, Glendale, Phoenix, Kingman, Tucson. Just so you know, Tempe is where Arizona State University is. So we've got a whole lot of students in that area. One of the additional reports that came was from a guy who said he was an amateur astronomer in West Phoenix. He describes the object west of his house as a cluster of solid, unblinking lights moving in a procession from north to south. He thought that each of the individual lights was in fact two smaller lights. So even though people are seeing 4 to 5 lights, he's saying that actually it's probably between 8 and 10 lights.
Tight clusters.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he also said that he saw two aircraft in the vicinity of the object, one of which seemed to turn away to the west and the other turned away to the east.
This is where they split off.
Well, no. So he's saying that he saw two aircraft, which this isn't super clear in his report, but I'm assuming he meant more terrestrial looking aircraft.
Sure.
As though they were trying to like follow around and then they one split off west, one split off east.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
The next sighting was near Camelback Mountain. People said that, again, it's in a boomerang or arrowhead shape and lights along the side. So, again, so much consistency with these stories. A woman who, again, did this fist clenching thing. And what? She said it was larger than her clenched fist.
How do people think of that? Like, on the spot, I would just be sitting there slack-jawed staring.
They're revolutionists.
Yeah, but I'm ready. I wouldn't be slack-jawed scaring because I would expect it.
You didn't expect that switch in dimensions.
Nope,
for sure.
I didn't. Let's not bring that up. I can't get distracted right now.
Sure.
So this woman, Camelback Mountain, watches it for 5 minutes with her kid. Just watches it move.
Mm-hmm.
Terrifying. Sure. Somebody mentions that it looked like there was a fire out in front of it, and somebody mentions a red laser beam. There are a lot of different pieces that come in. However, there is a lot of consistency surrounding the number of lights, surrounding the color of the lights, surrounding the arrangement / formation of the lights. The next place it was seen was in Tucson. Basically, a guy says he watched it for about 15 minutes. He watched it from 8:45 to 9 p.m. He said the lights came from the northwest, maneuvered around overhead, and then moved to the south in nose-to-tail formation, disappearing from sight as they moved over the mountains. And the last report came in from Kingman, Arizona, where somebody who was on their way to Arizona, a gentleman, called from a phone booth and said he had seen, again, the exact same thing, cluster of lights moving slowly in the northern sky, V-shaped. And that was the last reported sighting for the evening.
Interesting.
Yeah. If we're looking at the two different events, basically one in the Prescott, Arizona area and one in the Phoenix, Arizona area, clearly there's crossover because it traveled that whole distance, according to reports.
Potentially.
Right. But there are a lot of videos and photographs from the Phoenix event. There are fewer of the Prescott event, obviously just because of population differences. A very few pictures from, you know, the Prescott area, and we'll put those up as well. Television station reported on an individual who was named Richard Curtis, and he recorded a detailed video that showed the outline, he said, showed the outline of a spacecraft, but the video has supposedly been lost.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and the only other video from the Prescott area is really poor quality and shows just the group of lights. You can't make out whether there's a craft connecting them or not.
Sure, so it didn't necessarily block out the sky. Was there stars in the sky at this time?
There definitely should have been stars.
But they're in a city, it's true.
Yeah, so it's difficult to say because of the lighting. But more than one witness reported that they felt like it was, you know, I hate to use such a cheesy analogy, but almost like Independence Day, you know, where it's like flying low and it's like really
monstrous.
Wait, why would you ever say that Independence Day is cheesy?
It is cheesy.
I have to tell you, one of the moments in my life where I was the most terrified was, what year did Independence Day come out?
95.
Sure. So I was a kid. I was staying up late. I was the only one awake watching TV, and they aired this fake news promo, which was an ad for Independence Day.
Oh my God, seriously? That's awesome.
And it showed like the scenes where like the UFO was coming over the White House and under over all like the other major capitals across the world. And I fucking lost my mind.
Oh my gosh, it's amazing.
I was so scared.
That is good marketing.
Or maybe I dreamed it all. I don't know.
For some reason, that just... I guess my frame of reference with UFOs has always been things like the Phoenix Lights where, okay, if this was, and I agree with you, Byron, we'll talk about this next week, but what you threw out as a possible explanation, I think is very viable for discussion, that it was some type of a military craft. However, if it wasn't, my point would be, okay, let's say it was aliens. They flew over. They had absolute access to do whatever the hell they wanted to us. And they didn't. That's why I mentioned that Independence Day things are cheesy. Okay. I don't know that I believe in my gut that if we are being contacted by some otherworldly species, that they have any intent to harm us. And the other thing is, if they did, then we probably would never know about it. We would just be done. If somebody can travel across space and time to get to us, they're going to be thinking about things and processing in a way that God, I hope, is far more advanced than us. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So,
Sam, what do you think the odds are that this is the destroyer from Star Wars?
I don't think that there's any question.
Okay, just making sure. Same shape.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
Kind of like a triangle,
fist size.
It's about the size of it's. I mean, a little bit smaller than an outstretched,
yeah, but close can't enough, say that.
Kelly. The end of the reported events. Do you have any interviews with people?
Yeah, here are a couple brief interviews with people who witnessed that. As I said, we're going to get more into those specific firsthand accounts next week, but this will give you a little bit of a taste until we get to next week.
Weirdest chapter into a strange valley encounter.
3 months ago tonight, something strange happened in the skies over Arizona that still hasn't been fully explained. And in reality, we may never know exactly what happened that night. Tonight, first on Fox, we hear from a Phoenix family who may have been closer to whatever it was in the sky, closer than anyone else.
It's getting closer and closer, and we're saying, you know, that thing's coming right at us.
Tim Lee and his family are among the hundreds of witnesses who've come forward to talk about the night of March 13th, an event now known as the Phoenix Lights. The Lees first saw the lights while looking north from their home in the Sunny Slope Mountains.
When it finally got here and we realized this thing was coming right over us, we really started getting antsy. And then when it went directly overhead without a sound, it was like that. It was so big.
You couldn't even hear the wind. It was so quiet. It was just... Yeah. It just didn't even do anything. It just came through.
These images of what they saw are made on a computer. They're a combination of digital photos of the landscape taken by Lee and computer drawings of the objects his family saw in the sky.
It was a giant V, all right? And the right side of the V went over us. The left side was like a couple blocks over it.
I just didn't know what to do, you know? It was just like, my God, how big is this thing? It didn't seem threatening, but because when it was right overhead and we couldn't hear a sound, It was like you're just awestruck.
Jim Delatoso has been researching UFOs for 20 years. Right now, he's in the middle of putting together a virtual reality model of what happened that night. He's talked to hundreds of witnesses about the night of March 13th, including the Lees.
He thinks that he said if he had a tennis ball, he could have hit it. He could have thrown a tennis ball at it. It was that close.
It was very close. He just could have nailed it.
I consider Tim Lee and his family to be very reliable and very important in the data that they've given us, because they were so close that they could look up and, as they said, almost touch it.
The last light went right over my wife and I, and there was no light on the ground, but I could see up inside that it was almost like a recess, and it had fluorescent-like light inside, like a gas light of some kind.
You could see right through the middle of it, but it was like looking through two-way glass, like through a mirage that you see on the highway or something, or just when it's real hot. Right there, you can see through, but there was no light coming back or anything like that. It was just really weird.
This is the first time in the series of reports of that night that someone said that they looked up and saw a structured object.
As it went over, it went straight, like through this V right there, over that guy's house.
It took about 15 minutes to get from when we first saw it all the way till we couldn't saw it.
No one knows for sure what happened that night in the skies over Arizona in March, but thousands of people saw something. It's a night the Lees will never forget.
We just re-experience it every time we tell it. You know, it was just yesterday, you know. We've just never seen anything like it.
I was always a very polite skeptic. I would never tell someone, if they told me they saw something, I would never say, you're a liar or anything like that, because I don't know. But now I don't know what to think, because this is impossible.
Bring up the eerie music, please. This is weird stuff. Jim Delatoso, the UFO expert in that story, says the Phoenix Lights event in March is being talked about now all over the world, and he says he wouldn't be surprised if in the future the curious will flock to Arizona.
So as you can hear, these people are not crazy. These people are very legitimate.
Sure.
Lots of very normal people.
Yeah, they're definitely people.
Oh my God, just stop it. Now, one more thing I want to add very quickly. Since a lot of this came out, there's been an additional report of a sighting that happened before the sightings in Arizona. This same night at about 7:55, so the time's very consistent, somebody in Henderson, Nevada witnessed something the size of a, quote, 747, and something sounded like nothing more than rushing wind. Other than that, silent. Six lights with, you know, flying in a V formation going from northwest to southeast. If that is true, that would be completely consistent with it starting even as far away as Nevada, moving through into Prescott down to Phoenix. So I thought that was kind of interesting as well. Some of the different witnesses described shapes, and one of them, who really felt like it was a single unit, called it the shape of a carpenter's square. So I am not a carpenter.
I'm not a carpenter.
Right. But I think most of us can imagine that. Can we please imagine that picture of a carpenter's square?
I was just saying
no, you're not a carpenter.
Oh, yeah. So they can imagine the picture of a carpenter's square, essentially that it was one single unit. And I think that's one of the scarier.
What's your theory on that? Do you think it's multiple ships flying in formation or one solid unit?
I think it's one solid unit, possibly with a couple smaller ones around, but that the V that they're talking about, I believe, was one single unit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what is so special about Phoenix Lights? First off, as you can hear, it went over a long period of time, over a long geographical area, a large geographical area, rather. And because of that, had so many witnesses, very diverse witnesses. And it came at a time, I know this is silly to bring up, but this is X-Files, right? So people are kind of in this mode where it's a bit more mainstream to be talking about UFOs. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like there's been a little bit of a backlash. At this time, not everybody who talked about them was believed to be crazy. There's kind of this, I don't know, a reduction in shaming of UFO witnesses that I think came at a perfect time to allow a lot of people to call and report things.
There's a little bit of a theory about why people believe in conspiracy theories between war times. Like they feel less trusting of the government, apparently, at the end of wars, because during wartime, you're so focused on being pro-America and supporting your troops and supporting the government. So in the in-between times, like the peak moment where X-Files was popular, people are more likely to be like, oh, I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
That is interesting. That's really interesting.
I don't know how factual or...
I think maybe it's just people are willing to look more deeply at the things that are there all the time because now they have energy to dedicate to investigating them rather than... I mean, I think that what's there to distrust or believe in a conspiracy about is consistently there. But in terms of societal energy to dedicate in a direction or another, I hear what you're saying, that if there's a war on, there's a lot of energy that goes in that direction.
Okay, you don't question, you just support.
Or even if you do question, it's a very different scenario. I mean, I think that the undying support of military effort in America kind of died with Vietnam. But I think there is still at least some resounding patriotism that takes up energy, or even arguing against that patriotism. I mean, whatever direction you're going, there's going to be a lot of energy there. And then when the war or significant military effort is over, you can resume looking at things that have been there all along that you need to deal with that are domestic rather than international. I think that there are a lot of interesting explanations for the Phoenix Lights, but I think one thing that I hope you two are on board with saying, there was absolutely something. It was not mass hysteria. It was not a mass imagined event. Whatever these lights may have been,
there were lights.
Something that was very unusual.
Sure.
I will concede that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if something similar happened now with the prevalence of, you know, high-definition video cameras in everyone's hands?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, you guys. We'll talk about this next week, too. But the lights came back.
No.
Oh, my God.
The lights came back.
That's the very next day. They didn't
the
come back the next day.
The lights came back. I thought they were gone. So the lights came back.
So is that all we're talking about?
I think that's where we're going to leave it for this week.
So next week, we're going to get into the Phoenix mayor's response.
The governor of Arizona. So we're going to talk about witness accounts ranging all the way from police officers to teachers to the governor of Arizona. We're going to talk about the UFO report that came out of it from National UFO Center. And we are going to talk about possible explanations for the Phoenix Lights. And then we're going to wrap everything up by talking about when the lights came.
Oh, that's okay. This has been Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies this week. The time has come, guys. Let's go to camp.
I love camp!
And review a movie called The Hive.
Let's do it.
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
The Hive is a 2014 American sci-fi thriller film. I'm going to add horror to that. Co-written and directed by David Yarovesky, or Yarvo as they call him. Sam, would you like to tell us what this movie's all about?
Adam jolts awake inside a boarded-up infirmary with no recollection of who he is or how he ended up here. With threatening sounds penetrating from the outside, Adam has no choice but to reach deep into his memories to try and piece together what has happened. With the help of mementos he finds, Adam starts to piece together the puzzle that once was his life. He remembers his best friend Clark, Clark's girlfriend Jess, and the love of his life Katie, but there are other memories as well. Memories that couldn't be his.
Brim, brim, brim. Same thing, both effective. We killed it.
Yeah, well, that's good. The movie, it was very interesting. I felt myself pulled two directions. I loved the idea that it was very almost mystery style with a memento type theme.
Memento. Very
memento.
Right. They push this a lot.
We should say memento every two words.
Yeah.
But honestly, Memento is one movie to do that, but it's only the most recent one and the one that's fresh in everybody's memory. But that isn't a completely unique concept. This whole idea of you can't really remember and you're slowly pulling things together, but the audience is in the same boat as you and they're starting to figure things out at the same pace that you do. I think it's interesting. At the beginning of the movie, I really didn't like the way in which they kind of pulled it down to a almost teenage horror flick level to do that. But as the movie progressed, that whole concept grew on me. I thought that it was kind of neat. I mean, don't get me wrong. There were moments where I'm like, oh my God, the teen cheese is like overwhelming. But I thought it was neat. And some of the moments were actually genuinely funny.
I agree with neat, but I think a different version of neat. I think it was a little too clean and tidy at some point.
Oh, interesting.
These flashback moments happened and then were a bit too long, and they gave away a lot of information.
That's true.
You did get filled in pretty large chunks. It wasn't parsed out as...
You know what I could see happening, though? I could see them screening this with less of that, and you know, that's the problem when you're... This is going to sound so derogatory, but that's the problem when you're dealing with a fully... teenage themed movie,
which this is. I mean, right, it's definitely like, aimed towards
the average teen. Like, let's think the people who went to go see, oh my god, what was the horrible one with
the gallows.
Let's
oh
think
she
about the
admitted
people.
It she said it was horrible.
Well, compared
it's
to
on tape.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't think it was nearly as bad as you guys
okay.
did.
Okay.
But let's think about the average teen who goes to see The Gallows. They're going to need that lengthy beating them over the head with what's going on in order to track with the movie. So if they screened it for an audience and it was a little bit more like figure it out on your own, and people were like, I don't get it, they probably had to be a little bit more overt.
Yeah, you definitely have to be kind of brave as a director to trust your audience. It's tough because, and this is going to sound bad too, a majority of people who watch horror films are there to just sit and open their eyes. There have been a slew of movies that have surpassed this, and they're all the ones that are on our top 10 list.
Cerebral
every year.
Horror.
Sure, but I mean, I don't even necessarily like that stuff. I just like smart, good writing, and I feel like we have the pieces, but it doesn't end. Are you all right? I don't think you got a leg cramp.
What's happening over there?
I got an injury in the dimensional shift.
Sure, okay.
My leg hurts real bad.
I just think it wasn't necessarily as smart as the pieces could have been, but I don't think that makes it a bad movie. It just makes it a different movie.
Yeah.
It was a movie. I agree. It was a movie you could sit back and enjoy. It could have taken on some of those more mind-bending... I guess a more mind-bending approach where you really just hanging on every little morsel of information that you're given and trying to piece together what could possibly be happening. Whereas you're with the high of your, at least I was able to more passively watch and I didn't have to put much into it. But that being said, I enjoyed it. The story was, I thought, very well put together. They had some really neat elements, not to give too much away here, but some of the flashbacks to Russian experiments, I thought were done in a really cool, kind of creepy way that gives a very plausible, I don't know, I don't want to get into spoiler territory,
sure.
But it was a cool addition. It sounded really good.
Sound design was amazing. Yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed how close the environment felt, because the whole thing takes place at the summer camp. And we're basically in a couple of different cabins, you know, the infirmary, you know, one little spot outside, and then a brief car ride. And that's it. And so you feel like you're stuck at summer camp with the characters. An extremely effective way of making the absolute most out of the budget they had.
Which I don't know what it was. I mean, maybe you could look it up real quick. I can't imagine it was incredibly cheap unless this... Well, you know, Steve Aoki, I was going to mention he did the soundtrack, but he was also a producer in the film. So that takes care of that fee. Steve Aoki, a legendary DJ, makes $1,000,000 for standing in front of a laptop.
That's not true. He has hair, too.
Oh, yeah. He does have really great hair. I'm just kidding. He's probably very, very talented.
I'm sure he might be.
Because the sound design and the music in this is unreal. But I think the star of the show was the way it was filmed. Very high contrast, extremely stylized, and it's got those fun lens flares everywhere.
Very blue.
Yeah, very blue. Something you might expect in a music video for 6 minutes successfully worked for an entire feature, which I thought was really cool.
I agree.
Evil Dead-esque tilts, a lot of nods like that.
It very much had the Evil Dead feel.
Well, it had like a hip, young, cool version of the Evil Dead feel.
That's a good way to describe
it. It had
movie.
Like a
hip, young, and cool.
Or Byron and I.
It had like an ecstasy tent lens on the Evil Dead vibe.
All right, we're pushing the Steve Aoki comparison here. We're going...
Well, I mean, it really was, though.
Another really cool thing about this movie is it had something for everyone. It had the mind-bendy, kind of like not super over-the-top gory part. It had a really cute love story.
Yeah.
It which was great.
It's only because you love that chick.
I'm in love with that chick.
I know you are. But it's okay.
It has a lot of black ink vomit. And scary cross-eyed contact lenses.
Really great contact lenses. We agreed that we want these to wear in our daily lives.
Daily lives. I want Wes Borland, get out of here. I don't need your full black eyes. I got these cross-eyed googles.
Googly rotten eyes.
They're the best.
Can you imagine if Leslie and I had googles like that?
Oh, God, you have too much eye for those googles.
It'd be real scary.
The mind-bending that they sell this as, it's just kind of like mind-bending light or like accessible, which is totally fine. I keep sounding like that's a negative thing, that it wasn't confusing. It wasn't like a Nacho Vigalongo like we were talking about earlier. There's no big crazy reveal, really, which I don't want to get into spoilers either. But that was kind of disappointing, but also halfway through the movie, I didn't expect this to change into something new, you know? I knew halfway through what it was, and that wasn't a bad movie. It reminded me a lot of Open Grave, actually. I don't know if we have covered that on the show.
I don't know.
I think it was pre-recorded.
Pre-Friday.
Was it?
Open Grave is also fantastic.
Great movie. Underrated. I don't think a lot of people have seen that movie. It's very cool. Also stylized, but not necessarily in a hip way.
The whole amnesia, horrible secret about yourself that you maybe don't want to figure out.
I love it. Steve Agee pops in again. This stand-up comedian that was in Dark Was the Night as well.
Briefly.
He's popping in and out of these horror films. That's fun to see.
Other than Steve Agee, Gabriel Basso played Adam, the lead. Talitha Bateman played Kayla. Stephen Blakehart is credited as actor.
As actor, cool, IMDb.
Thanks.
So the main guy, he was in Super 8, is that right?
Yeah.
I can't remember him. I've seen that movie.
I remember there was just kids.
It was kind of like E.T. too, right?
Yeah, that's kind of what I got out of it.
Kelly, is there any other things about this movie we haven't talked about?
No, as we talked about even during the movie, there's not a whole lot we can do without spoilers. I do think it's a movie that's... This is going to sound really cheesy.
Okay.
But we have gotten comments from a few fans who listen to our podcast with parents or in some cases, even grandparents, which is pretty freaking cool, I think. And I think this is one of those movies that's actually an interesting and fun watch for multiple generations together.
There's black blood.
Right. But let's be honest, if it's a family that enjoys watching horror together, that's not going to freak them out too much. I mean, it's not like this is a martyr.
And also some nudity.
Yeah, but it wasn't that bad.
That was a funny scene. There was a funny nude scene, remember?
But it was pretty low-key. I mean, it wasn't. Anyhow, for people who have a decent tolerance for that stuff, I think that there are pieces that can keep teenage audiences entertained. I think there's just enough cleverness to keep some more adult audiences entertained. And everybody feels cooler listening to Aoki, so.
That's true.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No spoilers. Let's not do it.
Let's not do it.
It's available now on VOD platforms. I don't know if it has a DVD release, and it's being presented by The Nerdist, which is kind of interesting.
That is cool.
This is the second film they did. I can't remember the name of the first one, but it was about Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, okay.
About Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called.
Not Knights of Badass, though.
No, that wasn't it. But it's cool to see a company like that branching out and helping some indie filmmakers make their shit. It's great.
Good on you, Nerdist, for distributing this.
Yeah, Hardwick was pushing this real hard. He had some good things to say, and I mean, I think we did too.
James Gunn? Love this movie.
Yeah.
He actually appeared on behalf of it as a special guest at its premiere at Fantastic Fest.
Is that right?
Yeah.
God, I love that guy. There's very few people who make it that are as cool as James Gunn, who get their start at Troma and continue to support small pictures and the little guy. He made one of the best Marvel movies. I think my favorite Marvel movie. But he still
certainly has, one of the highest grossing.
He still takes the time to watch these small indies and give them support. I think it's incredible.
There aren't many directors with his cachet that also have horror chops, and it's pretty awesome.
I actually think he's doing a new horror movie. I don't know the details. Maybe I'll talk about it next week. It's supposed to be some script that everyone in the business has read that they're like, there's no fucking way this is getting made. And it's getting made. I love that guy.
He's no Michael Bay.
Mm-mm. No.
I'm kidding.
He is no Michael Bay.
I'm not kidding about not being Michael Bay.
No, I'm saying no in a good way.
Yeah.
He is no Michael Bay, which is great.
Yeah, because Michael Bay is just awful.
What do you, what would you give this movie on a scale of 1 to 3?
On a scale of 1 to 3?
Yeah, 3 being the lowest.
And negative one being the highest.
Just, see, this is what I'm talking about. We're clearly in a parallel universe. We're using a whole new scale. I don't remember this scale because I am not the me that you saw last week.
No, you're you, but we're not we.
Oh, God, my brain hurts.
What would you give this movie?
What scale are you on?
No, the real scale.
The real one? What's the real one here?
The out of 10 scale. Come on, let's do
it. I tell you that I got my Christmas ornament and I got a...
I'm going to give this one a skinny Bob Christmas ornament. 5.6.
5.6.
It was fun. I don't think there was maybe as much there as there could have been in terms of the a real mind-bending element, but it was shot beautifully. They used Red Epics and it showed. The sound design and the soundtrack, the score, were impeccable. The acting was exactly what it needed to be for this. It was just an enjoyable movie all around.
How about you, Kelly?
I give it a 6.5. It was good.
Oh my God, that's it?
It wasn't great.
Sure.
It was good.
All right.
It was fun.
I get a 6.3. I thought I was going to beat you. I really enjoyed this movie.
I thought I was going to beat her also.
Oh, gosh. I want to know more about why you are the person that liked this movie the most.
Oh, that's weird. I'm never the person that likes movies the most. That's so strange.
Well, okay, but...
Clearly, we're obviously in a different universe because you are finding surprise in the fact that I like the movie the best of all three of us. Weird.
I just wanted to... Like, it doesn't
where
seem...
Where I come from... I'm always the one that gives the highest review.
Traditionally, I just don't expect a blood vomit movie to be
It wasn't real blood vomit. It was black vomit. It was totally not
I think it's scarier.
Gross. It wasn't that gross.
I give this movie a 6.3. I really enjoyed all the elements. I liked the humor at points. It was kind of childish, but I mean, I'm kind of a child sometimes. The gnarly shit that happened in this was pretty gnarly. I like a good blood vomit, as you'll see next week when I talk about a movie called Condemned. Also, it was really cute. And you know how much I like that stuff. I've been watching nothing but nonstop violence for a while. It's refreshing to see two people actually care about each other. It's nice. And this has been our review of Yarvo's The Hive. And if you've seen it, tweet us at Frightday on Twitter. We'd love to hear what you thought. Or just if you haven't seen it, tweet us too. Tell us what you thought about the things we said about it. You okay? And while you're at it, go to frightday.com. We've got a contest going right now. We're giving away a couple pins from Creepy Co. over the next couple weeks. This week, unfortunately, we're giving away a pin of a fallen hero, a Leatherface lapel pin with a sliding chainsaw.
Incredibly apropos.
Thank you so much, Creepy Company, for giving us those pins. Creepycompany.com is their website. Check it out. They've got some really cool stuff.
Some awesome lapel pins. Very cool. Sew-on patches. Awesome pennants. Stickers.
Spooky, ghoulish stuff.
Just really cool stuff.
Speaking of stuff.
Stuff?
We got stuff.
Stuff?
Shop.frightday.com.
Amazing shirts. Amazing pins.
One of the ways that you can support the show and keep it relevant. Or can't be relevant.
Can't be more relevant.
That's what we're in charge of. keep it going, I guess. I need some coffee.
Support Kelly. Support cryptids and conspiracies.
Funny you should say that. I'm working on a patch right now for us. Amazing. I don't know if you saw it. Yeah, those will be available soon, too. Lots of cool stuff this year.
Are we doing colors? What do we decide?
I don't know. We'll figure it out later, okay? Okay. Off air.
Okay.
So there's going to be lots of fun things. If you guys... That's amazing. Creepy Co. I love their stuff.
I'm laughing my dick off at this poster they have that's the famous X-Files poster, but instead of... I want to believe. It says, bitch, I might believe.
It's pretty great. I like it. This is season 2 of our show.
Season 2?
Season 2, episode 1 of
Holy
Friday.
Shit. A season as being defined as a full calendar year.
Yeah, exactly. As you can tell, things have changed around here.
Crazy.
Speaking of changing things, what do you say we talk to a ghost?
No. Uh-huh. We've done too much ghost talking tonight.
Oh, we're going to talk to a ghost.
I'm going to bed. You guys go ahead.
Take care.
Please.
EVP, or electronic voice phenomena, is a common practice within this dimension and on this podcast. It's used to capture answers and concerns of residual spirits, kind of like the Tennessee Wraith Chasers do. But they just hear crinkles of their Ruffles potato chips. We might hear something tonight. So far, we haven't heard anything. If you've heard anything in our EVPs that we didn't hear, because, I mean, ears are different, right, Kelly? Let us know. Tweet us at Friday on Twitter. But right now, what do you want to ask a ghost?
Not a damn thing.
Sam, we need to figure out which dimension we're in. Do they know what's up with that?
I have a question.
Okay. I'll let you ask it. This is all you. So call them forth.
Spirits who may be here with us in the Fright Day studio. If we can trouble you from your repose.
So polite.
If you could pass along a message to Gunner.
Oh, that's nice.
I have an extremely dull saw, and I was wondering if you have any hints on how to best sharpen the
in
chain.
In poor taste.
Is it,
I love
is
it.
It.
Tricks
is
and
it
tits.
Left, left, right with the file, or right, right, left?
Thank you so much for everything.
So disrespectful.
It's not disrespectful. If he's a ghost, that's... I mean, I don't know. I still don't know if being a ghost is a good thing yet, or if they're just trapped and... That's awful. But either way, we'll find out this week. Are you okay?
Fine.
Well, we made it.
We made it where? I don't know where I am.
You don't know.
It doesn't
I don't know.
Matter.
Hey, you guys, we really like all of you. We really appreciate that you listen. And we do this with a whole lot of passion and not a whole lot of resources. And one of the things you guys can do that is such a huge help is to write a review on iTunes. Get your friend to write a review on iTunes.
Get your friends to listen.
Yeah, get your friends to listen. The more listeners we have, and specifically the more reviews we have, the more we can do for you guys. That's one of the very specific fuels that keeps us going. So please.
Also, we always post the latest episode on our Facebook page. And yeah. One of the cool ways that you can share our show with your friends is just click the share button, and then everyone can see it on your wall. And that's great.
Absolutely.
Sam, can you think of cool ways to make people do stuff for us?
Well, you can point a gun at them.
All right. I think Sam needs to hit the hay.
You.
Sam's had a long day.
So we
might be watching a Paranormal Activity movie coming up pretty soon here. There's lots of other movies. We're coming up on our end of year episode. So I think we need to cover some of the movies that we may have missed as well. If the listeners have any recommendations, we'd love to hear them at Fright Day on Twitter, or contact at frightday.com is our email address. Sam, where can we find you on the internet?
Tweeting at Sam Fright Day. Email me, sam@frightday.com.
At Kelly Fright Day, tweeting wise. Mm-hmm. Kelly@frightday.com, email wise.
Okay.
I love hearing from all of you. Happy day.
Happy day.
Happy day.
You haven't looked outside yet.
Is it
the world's
snowing?
On fire.
It's on fire?
It's a different world now.
Oh my God.
I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter. Byron@frightday.com is my email address. You guys ever heard of a guy named Ed Kemper?
No. Nope.
Fill us in, Byron. Uh-huh.
Ed Kemper is my favorite serial killer. Did you know he spent some time in Montana before he went to California to murder a bunch of co-eds?
I think serial killers could all benefit by spending some time in Montana.
Mm-hmm. One time he cut off his mom's head and yelled at it for hours.
Just one time.
Yeah, just once.
You only get to do that once.
And until next Fright Day, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly.
And I'm Sam. Keep those saws oiled.